All levels of government are having to reshuffle the way they do business during the COVID-19 pandemic. The restrictions on gatherings and in-person contact are especially challenging for those trying to get their foot in the door of government. Tom Watson is an Abilene attorney challenging Jody Arrington for the 19th district seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. He got more than 19,000 votes in the March 3rd primary, but in a district that has leaned heavily Republican for decades, he has work to do to connect with voters by November. He joins me by phone. Let's start by talking about how you're reaching voters. What's your approach during this unique campaign season?
Well, it's difficult because you can't do person to person. So we're using social media mainly, Facebook, and we have a web page. So we're having to use that as well as email and telephone conversations. So it's quite difficult, but we're coping with it, and hopefully by middle of summer we could do some personal one-on-one contacts.
Now, without the ability to do those types of events, I'm sure that's having an impact on fundraising. It looks like so far you've raised about $4,500. How challenging is it to get funds raised during this campaign season? And do you feel like you've got the support from your party leadership?
Well, one of the problems is that the state Democratic Party has not targeted this district as one of those they think they can turn. So they are not, the state Democratic Party is not contributing money to the campaign. So we're having to pretty much do it on our own. And we have some plans for over the summer. And that's one reason we're doing all of the social media, because it's less expensive. And we can deal with that. But we believe we'll be in a competitive position financially by the end of the summer. And, of course, we don't expect to match Mr. Arrington's $1 million campaign fund that he's gotten from all the special interest groups, which have been contributing because he's primarily doing whatever it is that they want done, and so we're not going to get in that battle with him. But we believe that by the end of the summer we'll have sufficient funds to get the name out, and that we will be competitive.
Well, a lot of times challengers are able to get the attention of the public and the media by having events and getting out in the public during campaign season. But with that out of the picture, and the incumbent still issuing press releases on legislation and other news items, I thought I'd give you a chance to comment on some of the things that Congress is dealing with. I want to start by asking what you think the federal government's role, and specifically Congress, could or should be doing in response to COVID-19 that it's not? What hasn't been addressed by the stimulus spending plans or other steps they've taken?
Well, I don't know how long you have allocated for this conversation, but it would be pretty hard to cover all of the inadequacies of the present administration in dealing with the current epidemic. But the main problem is lack of tests to determine who has the virus, the lack of ventilators to those who have the most severe cases, and simply nobody, this federal government, is taking responsibility. The president claims that it's involved, it's up to the states to take over. So you have 50 different points of view. We have no unified voice coming from the federal government. And now the president is going to shut down the daily briefings that really were nothing but him speaking and making campaign speeches, and you'd occasionally see the face of the experts who grimacing because what he was telling them had no realistic bearing on what the truth was. So what has happened right now is that the truth is not being told. The federal government has just been default to the states on trying to solve these issues and take care of the problems that could be dealt with on a national level. The lack of ventilators, the lack of testing, all of that could be done through the federal government on a level and universal plane. But this administration simply ignores the people. They seem to believe that anybody over 65 is expendable. And so they don't care. That's the message that I have received from the federal government, is it simply doesn't care how many people die.
The president has talked about the possibility of the cure being worse than the disease. And he's referring to the economy and wanting to get the economy reopened. Are you concerned that the coronavirus task force winding down and the reopening of the economy is coming too early in the U.S.?
Well, I don't think there's any question that that is, in fact, what is going on. It is coming too early. And there will be a resurgence. The numbers will go back up. And I think we're already seeing that. They're certainly not going down. And it's the lack of leadership at the national level. And that includes Mr. Arrington, who has done nothing to try to encourage national leadership and has not spoken out on what the federal government could do. And so it's clearly the responsibility of the federal government, and the message that's being delivered is that those people that are most vulnerable are the ones that the government doesn't care about. So that's pretty obvious that they're trading dollars for lives.
Now, rural hospitals have been hit pretty hard during the pandemic, in part because they were told to shut down any kind of non-essential or emergency procedures. And already before the pandemic, a lot of rural hospitals were facing significant financial troubles. Do you have any ideas about how to keep health care providers from failing in rural communities?
Well, there is one very simple answer, and that's Abbott. The Governor Abbott could do a lot. He could open up Medicare and Medicaid expansions, and so that people would be covered, and this would increase revenue streams for those hospitals. It doesn't do them any good to give a grant to build a facility if you're going to shut it down because you can't get paid for rendering the service to the people of the community. So the very simple way is to open up Medicare and Medicaid, an expansion, and that would be the federal government would expand, but the local governors have to do the lifting of the restriction. And it's a very simple thing that Governor Abbott could do if he also had any care of for the people that utilize these systems. If you look at all of the advisors that Governor Abbott has, that Donald Trump has, and the lieutenant governor, you know, they rely on what rich people tell them. They don't have any poor people or even any middle-class people in this discussion. You have to have people, input from people in all walks of life and all income levels. And the present governor of the state of Texas, the president of the United States, and the congressional representative from the 19th Congressional District don't care and don't ask for opinions and viewpoints from those middle class and below. So, you know, there needs to be, we need to pay attention to the people who use these services. And we need to see that there are revenue streams for the hospitals that render those services. And it's not a difficult problem to solve. It is simply a problem that the governor and that the congressman don't care about solving. They don't care about solving those issues that affect rural people of a lower income level. So it just amazes me, and I can't express the dissatisfaction that it is a simple matter to solve, but they refuse to do it.
One issue that was in the news quite a bit before the coronavirus pandemic kind of claimed so much of the focus of politicians and the media was the work to get out of the trade war with China. I'm wondering how your approach to international trade would differ from that of Mr. Arrington, both with China and with Mexico.
Well, you know, we need to trade with China as well as the whole world. We can't isolate ourselves, and we can't isolate other countries. So we need to do whatever we can to encourage trade, but fair trade, so that nobody is taking advantage of a different situation. And so we need to see that the trade lines are open, and we need to see that it's fair for both sides. And there's talk about the Trump administration is trying to blame the virus on China, and some hoax about some laboratory that started it all, which is just not true. And that theory's been debunked by several recognizable authorities. But we need to continue to be open and be sure that our exports and the people in this country that are sending products over there, or the products that are coming in, that the agreements are fair for both sides.
Another economic story that's been affecting large parts of this district are the challenges in the oil and gas industry. That's an important industry in West Texas. How would you approach energy policies if you were elected?
Well, I think that basically we've got to recognize there are different forms of energy, and West Texas supplies all of the different forms of energy. We supply oil and gas, wind and solar. All of those things come from West Texas. The thing that we need to be sure is that it doesn't all get exported somewhere else. It gets sold at a fair price, and that all of the persons in West Texas, all of the population, benefit from this. It's just not an oil and gas situation. It has to include solar and wind. The price of gas and oil is going to come back. It's not going to stay, it may not go as high as it was, and that will be of benefit to all of West Texas that's filling up their fuel tanks. We have for a long time given oil a special place, and we need to be fair to the oil and gas industry, but we also need to be fair with all the other forms of energy production.
Since taking office in 2016, Congressman Arrington has been a pretty strong supporter of President Trump's, specifically with his immigration policies. I'd like to hear your views on immigration and the border wall.
Well, we're spending way too much money on the border issues. We need to develop better systems for allowing people to come in and work in this country to produce, and we will get the benefit from that. We don't need all of these draconian methods and building walls, spending money on building walls. We need to allow people to come in. We need to have a reasonable path for citizenship, or at least for a resident, allow you to live here while you're working and pay taxes. All of those things we need to do, and we don't need to drive the immigration underground. We need to have reasonable ways for people to come in and to become productive, if not citizens, at least residents. And so we need to work for a humane system and not work for one that rewards the persons who take advantage of the desire of people to increase their own welfare by coming to a country where they can find a job. So it's just, it's again, the government run by Trump and Arrington that want to pick on poor people. They want to make them responsible for everything that's wrong, and they're not doing anything to try to help people become productive citizens.
Mr. Watson, I wonder if there's anything that you'd particularly like voters to know about you at this point in the campaign that you think maybe they haven't learned about you so far.
Well, I would direct them. We have a both a website and a Facebook page, and my history is there. I am not a wealthy person. I came out from a farm in East Texas, worked my way through college, served a term of duty in the United States Marine Corps. When Donald Trump's daddy was paying a doctor to write a letter that he had heel spurs that he didn't have, at that point in time, I was in Vietnam. My family has always been patriots. My father was in World War One. I had two brothers in World War Two, one of whom was also in Korea, and I was in Vietnam. So I come by my view of service to my country honestly and through my family connections. And so I think that that's what they need to know. People need to know that I come from a family that is not wealthy, and really it was poor. My father died when I was nine, and fortunately my mother was able to get Social Security for me until she was able to get her turn 62 and get Social Security. So I know how it is for all people. I know how it is to have to live and struggle. And so those are the things that I've experienced what other people go through these days. So that's the message that I want to get across, is that I've been there and I've done it. And I know that it's not because people are lazy. It's because people don't necessarily have all of the opportunities, and we need to make opportunities available to everyone, not just the privileged few.
Well, Mr. Watson, I want to thank you for taking the time to let our listeners get to know you a little bit better.
Well, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Tom Watson is the Democratic candidate running for the 19th district seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. I'm Heather Claiborne. This is KACU.